You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast. My name's Oz Davis. I'll be co-hosting for the show once again. Hey, 2 weeks in a row. I'm on a roll here. And joining me much more consistently than myself is my co-host from Wisconsin and diehard Blue Bombers backer, Joe Pritchard. Joe, how's it going this week?
I'd be going better if the 44 and the Bomber game were on their side of the scoreboard, but hey, at least we found the points. Where were they all season? Three teams score 40. Everybody else scores over 20.
Yeah, how about it? Just before the cold weather sets in, right? We got a few 40 burgers this week. So yeah, if you love the scoring, you love this week, and it wasn't all offensive scoring either. Particularly in that Calgary-Saskatchewan game. But we can talk about that in a bit. And we are going to talk some Winnipeg Blue Bombers football in just a bit. But I'd like to get right into this particular news over there on CFL.ca, the league's official website. There's a report coming in today from TSN's Dwayne Ford about Daron Carter, arguably the most talented guy not on a CFL roster right now, who could be. Mr. Ford is linking him to the Toronto Argonauts, which seems to make a lot of sense, not only because the BC Lions and Montreal Alouettes have pretty much formally passed on his services, but also because this would reunite him with former Montreal Alouettes general manager Jim Popp. Now, what kind of worries me about that whole situation is, was Pop the one that kind of eased Daron out the door in the first place over there in Montreal? The reports have it that the Argonauts might be interested. Obviously they could use him. What would be your gut reaction to this, Jim?
See, so that was the end of 2016, correct? Where he was being eased out?
Yes.
So that's also when Pop was being pushed out the door. So,
okay. So it's probably not Pop.
Yeah. At this point, anything that Montreal's done over the past two calendar years at this point is hard to explain. Let's just put it that way. So I could certainly see that not being his call at that point, especially if they're coming together to possibly get him into Double Blue, or maybe they've both had changes of hearts. Maybe the stuff that was going on in Saskatchewan wasn't as bad as rumored. You just don't know, because there's so much insinuation and innuendo about it. But it all happened after he left Saskatchewan this time around. It wasn't hovering over him the whole time, besides just the fact that he was known for it. We didn't have a lot of details besides the a few unfortunate incidences in airports. We really hadn't heard much about Carter off the field until he was gone in Saskatchewan, and that's when the knives came out. So I would say that this is probably going to work out at least through the rest of this season, is my guess, if they go ahead and go through with it.
I mean, imagine reuniting him with SJ Green. When they call this, you know, Montreal Central over there in Toronto, they're making a point here. Toronto passing game has actually looked pretty good in the last couple of games, but jeez, they could sure use a double threat like Daron Carter on that team.
If I'm an Argo fan, do I really want all these people from Montreal coming together on my team, given that Montreal's been just awful the past 5 years?
Well, they seem to be cherry picking all the best players, though. They're getting all our good guys, you know, except for Noel Thorpe, you know, who went over there.
Right, and the defense is what carried that team until Thorpe left. So,
well, Yeah, but those defensive guys have aged out as well, right? About the only notable offensive player from the old days left, it seems to me, is Terrell Sutton. So until Terrell Sutton becomes an Argo, yeah, I think they can keep cherry picking the good Montreal Alouettes of the mid 2010s. Let's talk about this one. I would be very jealous as a Montreal Alouettes fan that they signed this dude and team him up with SJ Green, because like I say, it is my contention that the passing game is just now starting to look good again in Toronto, mostly in the second half, but still it's better than nothing. I'd also like to talk about this one because I'm not even a Bombers fan, but I was a little bit irked by everything happening with this particular situation. Matt Nichols has been receiving, I don't really want to describe it as negative press in the past couple of weeks, but certainly not so happy press, let's say, not so positive press as he could be getting, considering his team is still in a playoff position and still has a winning record and is the highest scoring offense in the league, by the way. But that's water under the bridge. Let's talk about this one in the game this week against Ottawa, which was a tremendous win by the Red Blacks, in my opinion. At one point, Nichols left the game, had a slight elbow injury. The Strevolution re-began there for, I think, 5 pass plays and maybe a couple of drives. I don't remember the exact stats on that one. But and then when Nichols came back into the game, he was booed. Now, after the game, much was made about Nichols' comments. I mean, obviously, Nichols was very upset about this. Among the comments, you know, stuff like, the saddest thing tonight for me was I feel like I give my heart to the city and this team, quote unquote. Another one says, it was pretty sad for me. I took some shots tonight, took a big one on my elbow, had to come out for a couple of plays, shook that one off, and got booed by the whole stadium that I was coming back out there. That was pretty hard for me tonight. Now, he kind of walked this back a little bit. But I got to say, Joe, you're a Bombers fan. Does he need to walk this back? And they're making a lot about his stats, but do the stats really matter that much?
I don't think he has to walk it back at all. I believe the booing may have been misinterpreted by him a little bit. Just simply, it was more of a situational thing, more so than booing him directly. But even so, even if they were booing him directly, he's got the right to have that opinion and to voice that opinion. He's been the best quarterback the Bombers have had since Kevin Glenn. I'll say that much. Buck Pierce may be mentioned here and there on that one, but he's been the best guy in Bomber Blue since Kevin Glenn was a consistent starter about a decade ago, maybe even longer now. It just kind of makes me laugh that Bomber fans want better. They've seen so much worse.
Well, yeah. That was another
thing. And then the reaction the next day saying, well, why is he saying that? Well, we have the right to boo. It's, yeah, but he has the right to have that opinion. Why are you picking on him for that? Oh, wait. It's because he's a player and he's supposed to spot all those cliches. But wait, don't we want our players? Don't we want to get to know our players? Don't we want them to say interesting things when they're interviewed? Well, the next time Matt Nichols is interviewed, he sure as hell is not going to say anything interesting now.
No, it's going to be canned. It's going to be, I hope the fans appreciated the win. It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be pure jock speak, I would guess.
And then they'll pick on him for that too. So you can't win sometimes.
Why were the fans booing? I mean, okay, they were down 22-7 at half. They went down 38-14 late. But again, like you said, I mean, this is Winnipeg. I mean, in very recent memory, I mean, this team has been terrible. And, you know, it seems, I don't want to say it's a foregone conclusion, but they're certainly on track to make the playoffs this season again. Might even get a home game. Probably not, but could. I just don't understand why the fan. I mean, it's just a bad game, right?
Well, and to take the fan side on this now, this was a pretty important game, and they got the crap. got him by a team that has now a better record, but had the same record coming into the game. They didn't look good at all. We don't think anybody's going to catch Calgary. I don't think anybody thinks that at this point. But second place in the West isn't a bad place to be, and they blew a golden opportunity to stay with Edmonton, because you knew Edmonton was going to win the next night. But they had a chance to make a statement, and all season long they've been inconsistent. They haven't been able to put things together on a week-to-week basis. Some games they got it all together. Some games they have nothing. Some games they have that one half together and one half not. They had a chance to come out after after the bye. After the Hamilton game, they didn't have a bye. They had the bye the week before. But after the Hamilton game, where it looked like they were going to start letting things slip away, they had a chance to come out and say, okay, we pulled that one together. Let's go out and have another week in a row where we can beat a team out there. And they weren't in the game. I mean, the score, 38-14, Ottawa fans may not have been comfortable with that lead, but I sure as heck was comfortable for them when it got to that point.
No lead is safe, Joe. I guess that one was. Because this is the thing that really bothers me, especially with respect to the Hamilton Tiger Cats situation. I mean, here's a guy whose fans have been so vehement about what an elite quarterback he is and about how, you know, 9 straight games with 300 yards, okay? Then you have Matt Nichols, and the book on him this season has been he hasn't had a game over 300 yards. He's only passing at about 62-63% completion rate. You know, all this stuff. But Nichols is 4-2 as a starter. I mean, what's the problem? Even after this game, what's the problem here? I don't understand. Why is the media sort of turning against this guy at this point when Masoli is getting praised for being, and in my estimation, is maybe the 5th or 6th best quarterback in this league? What's going on here?
Well, they're not accounting for the fact that Andrew Harris takes a lot of yardage away. You can't have it both ways. You can't have a star running back like Andrew Harris give him the ball a bunch of times each game and then expect your quarterback to turn around and throw for 400 yards every game too. One or the other. Right. That's the way that's going to work out. He's not turning the ball over. The completion percentage is a little bit low. They've been a little bit inconsistent in putting together drives, but I would say on the whole, they've been pretty good as an offense this year. I think they're just looking for reasons to say he's not that good. This past game wasn't a good one. It wasn't a good one for anybody on the Bombers team. But let's take a look here. They've put up 289 points this season. They've played – everybody's either played 8 or 9 games. Ottawa's played 9. They're – third with 244, and they're thought to have a really good offense. Edmonton has 261 in 9 games. They're thought to have a pretty good offense. The Bombers have blown both of those teams away. They have almost 40 points more than the second place team points. There's some teams that have played 8 games as well, but the only team that would have a chance to come close to the Bombers in their 9th game is Calgary. And they're behind by 66 or 56 points, is my math. So even if they put up 40 against the Bombers this next week, the Bombers would have still scored more in 9 games than anybody else would have. So picking on the offense right now just because Matt Nichols doesn't have pretty numbers is just ludicrous to me.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll move on to the Red Blacks in just a second, but I did want to get this one more in there. The Blue Bombers have been pretty impressive on defense, especially in the second quarter of the season. But they've kind of been living and dying on the big play. Now, in this game, 0 interceptions, 1 sack. How much of that had to do with the lack of success?
Well, it's the same thing from last year. They give up a ton of yards. Mm-hmm. They have. That's just the way this defense operates. But they're ball hawks. If they can sack the quarterback, if they can intercept passes, if they can take the ball away any which way, and if their special teams is playing as well as they can be, it becomes a pretty formidable unit. But when that's not there, all of a sudden it doesn't look all that good. And that's why they have the consistency problems they have, is because they're giving up chunks of yardage every single week. And if they can't keep the ball out of the end zone while doing that, then you see teams putting up 44 on them.
Right. Okay. Let's go to the other side of the ball for a while. No offense to the Bombers fans, but I think that's enough for now. Let's talk about the other side of the ball. Now, here's Trevor Harris. And if you ask me, especially for everybody who's so gaga about stats, this guy has got to start entering the conversation to be most outstanding player. Another big stat line for him, 29 of 39, 361 yards, one touchdown, zero picks. William Powell, 106 yards on 5.9 yards per carry. A lot of carries, but nice consistency there. You got to love the way this offense is coming together this past few games. I mean, in this game, he had six bona fide receivers on top of being able to go to Powell once in a while on that little outlet pass. I mean, you got Ellingson, you got Dominique Rimes, one of the best names in the CFL, by the way. You got Sinopoli, you got Deontay Spencer, you got Beaulieu, and as we would say it in French, and the new guy, RJ Harris. These guys, I think, with this win, have taken control of the East. But I'm wondering, I should ask Joe, do you think that this could be the most impressive regular season that we've seen out of the Red Blacks?
I would think so. If they can keep this up in the second half of the season, they would match if they went 6-3 again in the second half of the season, they would match what they did in 2015. And in 2015, it kind of felt like they were doing it with smoke and mirrors a little bit.
Right.
And they got a little bit of help from the schedule to do that. This would feel like a little bit more of an impressive, way of doing it. It always seemed like they were winning the really tight games and they caught teams at the right times. This year, they really don't have that. The last couple years, they've been inconsistent, either with injuries or just inconsistent play. This year, they're a lot more consistent, putting wins up when they're not playing well or giving up a game when they were playing well. Last couple weeks haven't exactly bolstered my theory, but before that, they were consistently hanging on with everybody except for Calgary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Calgary is the only team that really manhandled these particular Red Blacks, who are now 6-3, tied for the second best record in the CFL. But you got to think that, if I'm the Stamps, I'm looking at them later in the season. I'm a bit scared of them in November. And I also thought it was interesting, too, that with this win, for the first time ever, and this is a team that's been in two Grey Cups already, for the first time ever, we're going to take them seriously in the playoffs.
I think in 2015 and even 2016, you would take them seriously simply because in 2016, they had so many injuries. They had so much inconsistency with both quarterbacks going down at different times. Yeah, sure, the final number didn't look all that good, but you knew that there was a team behind that. Last year, you just really didn't get that feeling, though. So I know where you're coming from on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, geez, one year we had a guy in the CFL podcast network that, shaved himself because Ottawa got so far in the playoffs. I mean, come on.
That was a regular season. That was a regular season.
There you go.
It was.
Not taken seriously. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That's a classic podcast story that I can't help bring up as often as possible. All right, let's move on. Toronto Argonauts 24, BC Lions 23, forecasted by yours truly, who picked the Argonauts to win this game. I am sorry that Dr. Rouge, our resident Toronto Argonauts fan, is not here, because I wanted to ask him if he's on McLeod 9 yet over young Bethel Thompson at quarterback. Again, do stats matter at all? Not a very impressive game statistically for Bethel Thompson, but, in that drive that put Toronto ahead to stay, bridging the third and fourth quarters, That was a 5.5 minute drive. He went 3 of 5 for 54 yards, made a couple of nice passes, converted on third down. Okay. Once by penalty, granted, but the drive itself took 5.5 minutes. What are we looking at with Bethel Thompson here? Is he a classic game planner guy, or is he just smoke and mirroring it here?
I think it's a little early to tell,
right.
But I will tell you on those long drives in the second half, I was actually listening. I listened to the second half on the radio, mm-hmm. Instead of watching it, because I had a lot of other things I needed to get done that day. And I was just hearing James Wilder, 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 Wilder. And he wasn't doing anything spectacular.
Right.
But he was moving the ball down the field. Thompson right. was involved as well, of course. But Wilder was carrying the team down the field in the second half.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, I did want to talk about James Wilder Jr. on this game, 140 total yards, touchdown. But and lately he's been coming into his own a little bit, but you get the feeling that he still hasn't broken out yet. I mean, now obviously he's not going to turn in the Beatty Feathers numbers that he turned in last year. But do you believe that Wilder is set to be the X factor for the Argos heading down the stretch in the second half of the season like he was last year?
I think if Thompson can gain the respect of CFL defensive coordinators and have them thinking he's worthy of being stopped, then they'll stop focusing on Wilder as much. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, Toronto might just win out at that point.
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, jeez. If the dude catches on fire like he did in those in the second half last year, wow! I mean, you can't stop this. And then they'll go ahead and sign Daron Carter too, just for kicks. I mean, wow! The Argos could be scary if everything comes together. Frightening. Two scary teams in the East. I'm sorry that. Well, I guess on the radio this was a pretty good game. What sort of sense did you get for this game on the radio? Just out of curiosity. A bit off topic, but.
Well, watching the first half, it just felt like BC had control. But I listened to the Toronto broadcast in the second half, and you could just tell it felt like the Argos were climbing back into it. Mm-hmm. And then once they had gone ahead, it was like, okay, they finally got to where they're going. But you could just feel them building it up. And building up to try to catch BC, because BC had gotten out to a pretty substantial lead at one point, but they just kept chipping away and chipping away at it. You weren't hearing the big plays. You weren't hearing, hey, look, a 70-yarder for a touchdown. It was, this is another impressive drive. They're going down the field. Here's some more points. They're climbing back into this. And BC wasn't able to pull away either. So you could really feel the excitement when Toronto went ahead.
I think this is really the secret of BC Lions this year. If they're not playing at home in that second half, they just disintegrate. You know, I mean, Toronto is not a high-powered offense here. I mean, here's Bethel Thompson. Okay, so he's got 260 yards on 29 attempts. That's fewer than 10 yards per attempt. The long for the game was a 30-yarder to Anthony Coombs. Right. And he extended that by a good 10 or 11, if I recall correctly. I mean, this is not a high-flying offense, but in the second half of these games, if BC's not at home, they're just letting the teams move the ball at will. I mean, this seems to be a psychological thing. Or is this because Solomon Elamimian's been out?
I was just about to say that. It's like if they had Elamimian or Big Hill back there, able to track down that back before he got that couple extra yards for the first down, this game feels a lot different.
Right.
But they you could just tell they were running him over.
Yeah. 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 I mean, okay. So what sort of, I mean, of course, I've been a BC Lions truther for a while here, but I kind of think this was a game they didn't really need to win, but they really wanted because, of course, next week now it's all in against Saskatchewan. Next week is a must win for BC Lions, and it didn't have to be had they win this game. I don't know. Are they in trouble now with this loss?
I think so, and I would I would argue to say this week was a must win, given the circumstances and given the fact that they had a lead. Giving that up and putting themselves squarely into fifth place right now.
Yes.
Not a place they want to be. If Saskatchewan is becoming the team we think they are, and we'll talk about them a little bit later, and if Winnipeg can keep some semblance of themselves together, they're doomed. I believe Winnipeg has a season series at this point. I think they only play twice, correct? I'd have to check on that. Yeah, but I think they got the season series by the fact that they won impressively before they lost by a field goal. So they don't have the tiebreaker there. They're going to need to beat Saskatchewan if they want to even talk about the tiebreaker there, I'm sure. If they lose a tiebreaker to the two teams they're chasing, that makes their lives a lot more difficult later in the season.
Yep. It sure does. Right. Okay. Speaking of difficult seasons, let's talk about this one. Edmonton 40. Here's another 40 burger for you. Montreal 24. I was really hoping that Dr. Rouge was going to be here because I was fully planning on mixing myself a drink, pulling a John Fraser, and just skipping out on this one entirely. But let me give you a few thoughts on this game. I was sad to see that my boy, former University of New Mexico Lobos quarterback Austin Apodaca, was listed only as the third string quarterback on the depth chart for this game. We even had a Matt Schilt signing, so I suppose we can look forward to that next week. Oh boy. I gotta say, I couldn't really find too much positive stuff. I just listened to a couple of hours before I recorded this podcast with Joe. I listened to the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast, and God bless those guys for trying to be positive about our new quarterback. But I just did not see it in this game. 3 for 12 on, or 3 for 15, I'm sorry, on second down really says a lot. Really our only positive thing is maybe Mwamba, had one sack for the game, had 12 tackles for the game following his 10 last week. But, how surprising is this when your defense is on the field for 39 minutes? On top of this, they got one receiver, with more than two receptions. That's B.J. Cunningham. He had, six receptions. The team gets 14 penalties for 129 yards, pretty much even between offense and defense. Tyrell Sutton is knocked out of the game in the fourth quarter, which is just what we need. He's the only fan favorite. He's the only producer on this whole team. I don't know. Did you watch this game, Joe? Did you enjoy this travesty?
No, this one I took a pass on.
Took a pass on altogether.
Right. Yep. Okay. Yep. I took a pass on it. Had some family things that we wanted to get taken care of that night, so that's what we did. And I got exactly what I believed I was going to get in this one, so I don't regret that one bit.
Well, you should probably go back and at least look at the highlight tape, because for me, the interesting bit for Edmonton in this game, no surprise, Mike Riley, 33 of 42 for 424 yards, three touchdowns, and one interception. But fantastic game. But for me, the real, headline of this game was Shaquille Cooper playing in his first game in the CFL. 17 carries, 102 yards, 6.0 yards per carry. Really nice game for him. Also in the receiving corps, Mitchell Bryant, 7 receptions for 128 yards. So here's a couple of new toys for Mr. Riley to play with, I think, just in time. So you might want to go back and look at the highlight reel on that one. I was hoping to ask your opinion on that one, so please check it out. I'm going to talk a little bit about this later, but I think Shaquille Cooper is the X factor next week. Go ahead.
I believe he's back on the practice roster because CJ Gable's back, so I don't think he could be an X factor at this point.
Too bad. I wanted to see what he was going to do against Hamilton this week. That's too bad. Antonio Pipkin, it seems, will start next week, but I can talk about that a bit later as well. Let's talk about the more interesting game, probably the most interesting game of the week. You know, while the Eskimos putting up a 40 burger on Montreal isn't that outrageous, the score Saskatchewan Roughriders 40, Calgary Stampeders 27 was pretty shocking. I'd really like to hear your thoughts on this one, Joe, but first I'm going to drop a couple of my thoughts in there because, hey, I'm hosting the show. In hindsight, you know, it's easy for us to say that, yeah, we should have seen this coming. We should have seen this coming. Right? The Riders were coming off a bye week. You know, they got rid of Daron Carter, who apparently was this massive distraction or whatever. They had home field advantage. Nice pass rush. Second thing I wanted to say is, in defense of the Stamps defense, the Riders scored one pick six, there was one special teams touchdown, and they once got the ball at the 1 yard line. So even if you count that little plunge by a defensive player behind you, for the Riders, the Stamps defense can only be pegged with about 28 points given up in this game. Joe, tell me please, what did you get out of this game? Thoughts?
Well, even the most well-oiled machines, sometimes they need to have a little maintenance done after a rough outing. So I'm sure that next week Calgary is going to go back, fix all these mistakes, and, you know, just slaughter their opponent. So good of them to get the bad one out of the way. It was going to happen at some point, and, you know, they weren't going to go 18-0. I mean, we like to joke about that, especially since our friend over at the Horseman Ryan, famous guy in Canada, by the way, loves to make the 18-0 claim. But that's always in fun. But this team showed the potential of possibly being able to do it getting this far in the season without a blemish. But that's just so hard to do. So it was going to happen at some point. They played definitely not their best game, and Saskatchewan, well, they're a good team, and they had the same problem as Winnipeg does. They just don't have the consistency week to week. We see that with them this week. They played fantastic. Who knows what they're going to show up doing next week?
What do you mean Saskatchewan is inconsistent? They're the only team to have lost to the Alouettes, and they're the only team to have beaten the Riders, the Stamps. What do you mean they're inconsistent? So in any case, well, I wanted to ask you this, though, because I'll tell you what, where the Riders really dominated, I thought, was on the pass rush. I mean, 5 sacks of Bo Levi Mitchell, which hasn't happened maybe in forever. I did not go back and look at the stats, but I can't remember in the last 3-4 years this happened. You know, Charleston Hughes by himself had a monster game, 2 sacks, forced fumble. You know, I mean, what this game was about for me was just about the Riders blitz, 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 blitz. And this was once, you know, in fact, last year, this was considered statistically an all-time great offensive line. But you're willing to say this was an aberration?
I'm willing to say it was an aberration as far as the total team effort went, but Saskatchewan we've been talking about Saskatchewan's pass rush all year.
Yes.
They haven't been quite as consistently terrifying as we thought they would be, but when they're on, they might be the best unit in football.
See, that's what another podcast I was listening to today, and I forget which one it was. It might have been the 3 Down Greencast. They were saying that the Riders may actually have a better pass rush than the Stamps, but I'm still going with the Stamps on this one. I want the Riders to show a little more consistency, in fact, like you just said. I will say this, though. I pity the Bombers and the Eskimos, the number 2 and the 3 teams in the West right now, and for the next 3 weeks, they both get Calgary. So I would be pretty frightened if I were those teams right now, because I think the Stamps, as you claim, are going to make the adjustments, and I think they're just going to be straight up angry and concentrated in these statement games these next 3 weeks. In any case, let's wrap up the first half of the show, And let's talk about next week's game
after this break on the CFL podcast.
CFL podcast. I have myself another beer because I'm going to have to talk about the Alouettes again.
Better make it two.
Make it a double. Right. Let's talk about next week's games. Wow. We have got some interesting and, might I say, tough to pick games this week coming up. This is going to be a good one. All right. Nice, nice halfway point in the CFL season. Right. Let's start it off with Edmonton Eskimos, 2.5-point underdog at the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Now, Hamilton has not been a dominant force at home. In fact, I believe in the last 20 games, they have a better record away than at home. But here's the interesting thing about Hamilton, and here's why I was going to look for Shaquille Cooper in this game. Hamilton is tops in passing yards, I should say. Yes. Wait, no, is this correct? They're last in passing yards allowed per game and first in rushing yards allowed per game. So I was gonna look to see what the rushing game could do against these Hamilton Tiger Cats. I guess I'll be looking instead at good old CJ Gable, who used to play for these Tiger Cats. I think for this reason, I think the Eskimos are gonna surprise. Hamilton won this game in week 2, 38-21, but Hamilton is on a major skid. In case anybody hasn't noticed, they're 1-4 in their last 5. All 4 of those losses were against prospective playoff teams, and all 4 of those losses had them scoring 23 or fewer points. I think the Eskimos are going to outscore them in this game. I would definitely take the Eskimos plus the 2.5, and I'll take them to win outright.
Actually, I'm going to disagree with you.
Great.
I feel like the Tiger Cats are going to pull this one off because I'm off the Edmonton bandwagon. I had them winning the West at the beginning of this season, but they haven't really done anything to tell me that they deserve that kind of lofty thought process about them. Here's the other thing too. Hamilton's coming off the bye, and Edmonton played a late Saturday night game and will be playing a Thursday night game. So you got the short week, you got the travel to the East, so you're losing time that way too. And then you have a team that's coming off a bye. I just, based off the schedule, I gotta say Hamilton.
Okay. Alright, good. I like the disagreement. We probably won't disagree on this one though. Toronto Argonauts, 5.5-point favorites at Montreal. I guess the big news here is that Johnny Manziel, Johnny Canadian Football, will not be playing in this game. I have the story on this. Yes, today, which is Wednesday the 22nd of August, it was reported that Johnny Manziel, quote, not at practice with Montreal Alouettes. Let's see. I'm trying to find the quote here. This is great podcasting here. No real quote. You know, Coach Sherman said he feels good. His testing is good. The doctors wanted to keep him inside today, so that's where he is. I expect him back for practice tomorrow, which would be Thursday the 23rd, but he's likely not going to start this game. Antonio Pipkin is going to start. And all I can say is free Austin Apodaca. It'll be great to see if Daron Carter signs with Toronto. He's obviously not going to play in this game. I'm going to go against the grain a little bit. I'm going to say that the Alouettes keep this one competitive. I just don't believe that Toronto has anything going in the first half yet. They've been depending on McLeod's comebacks in the second half. I think Toronto's going to do just enough to win. I'm going to say Montreal, outrageously. Montreal's going to cover this 5.5, but Toronto's going to win.
I'm not even – I'll take Toronto and I'll give the points. If Montreal's defense was anything like it had been the last few years, I would feel a lot more confident about your stance. But they're giving up 40 burgers, consistent basis. So even with, Toronto maybe being more of a mechanical offense, maybe not being a big play offense, they could just take the ball and drive up and down the field all darn game. And it could, maybe it's not 40 points, but they'll win by a pretty comfortable margin.
I mean, one of the reasons why the defense used to be so good under Thorpe and before that in Montreal is because they didn't have to stay on the field for 35 or 40 points a game. That was part of the problem. And I, for one, am just not ready to believe in the Pipkin revolution yet. I'm just not ready for that.
So no Antonio Canadian football for you.
Well, again, I'm holding out for former University of New Mexico Lobos quarterback Austin Apodaca to get out there. Of course, all he's going to do is hand it off a couple of times. Right. Let's talk about this one. And I'm going to let you go first on this one. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 8.5-point underdogs at the sure-to-be-angry-as-a-hornet's-nest Calgary Stampeders. What are you thinking, Joe?
I think you just explained why, beyond the fact that why pick against Calgary if they're going to go 15-3? You'll lose 3 out of 18 throughout the season. You might as well just take them every week anyway. But they're pissed off. Winnipeg's obviously not playing well. It's in Calgary, where Winnipeg doesn't win unless it's week 20 or 21 in the snow, and Calgary has nothing to play for. Because that's literally the last two times that Winnipeg has beaten Calgary. Where in those circumstances, they don't talk about a streak anymore, but I can't remember the last time. It may not have even happened since I've been a Bomber fan, that the Bombers have gone into McMahon in a game that meant something and beat the Stamps.
Yeah. Come to think of it, it has been a while. That's something I'll try and look up for the next show. What do you think? Can they keep it close?
If everything goes their way, yeah, they could. Okay. Or if Calgary gets up off to such a big lead that they start pulling starters, they can creep up. Because that's happened a few times too, where either with Willie or with Nichols, Calgary has just gone out and had a 20-plus point lead, and in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden the Bombers start moving the ball, start scoring touchdowns, and they end up getting the ball with one last chance to actually pull together, and that doesn't happen. So even if it's close, it's gonna break my heart.
So as long as you're ready for that, just remember Banjo Bowl is after that, right?
So Winnipeg goes to Calgary. Then they go to Saskatchewan, where they don't win either. And then they play Banjo Bowl, which they're better than 50-50 on that. But it's going to be pretty upsetting to me if I show up to Banjo Bowl and they're 5-6, which is a distinct possibility at this point.
It is. It is a distinct possibility. And fourth place in the West is the distinct possibility too, because Saskatchewan Rough Riders, 2.5-point underdogs at the BC Lions. Now, I've been talking about being a BC Lions truther for a while here. And this thing about how BC is undefeated at home, that they've had 3 games in primetime in Vancouver, which of course is a massive, let's say, biological chemical advantage against opposing teams. So I've been obsessed with this notion. So what I did was I looked back at last year, and last year this team was 2-5 in such games, right? So I'm going to say, just based on that, because I believe this BC Lions team is not as good as last year's BC Lions team, just based on that, I think the numbers are going to balance out. I think Saskatchewan is going to win outright, and I think BC Lions are going to start playing catch-up, and then eventually they're going to start playing give-up on this season.
Yeah, but this is going to be their biggest opportunity to try to climb back into the race. But if they lose this one, it's going to be a long second half. Mm-hmm.
And I think in the last game, they showed that the opposition showed that even if you single cover Manny Arsenault, you still are not necessarily going to score more than 23 points. You know, I mean, that's just it. So Good luck to the BC Lions in this one because they really need to win this game, but I'm looking at Saskatchewan. Okay, Joe, before we go, as I understand it, the challenge is on. I believe that this is a ritual of the CFL podcasters to do the 100 days in shape before the Grey Cup. Is that what it's called? What is this thing called?
Well, it's the Grey Cup fit up, and it's pushed by the league and not just the podcasters. Okay. So a lot more than just the podcasters are participating. Although there's a few of my Twitter friends like to refer to the Grey Cup fat up and say that they're not doing anything remotely close to getting in shape. So I would say that you're going to see a lot of tweets about this, and it's really good to see people are coming together and trying to get themselves into better shape. Myself, I only get to sleep till 5:30 anyway, so getting to the gym isn't really on my priority list at the moment.
All right. I think over there at the Three Down Greencast, they're doing the beer up. I think they're going to try and have a beer every day for the last 100 days, which will be a real challenge for those guys over there. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, I'm sure that'll be a challenge.
Yeah, major challenge. Well, I was going to ask you what you were going to try and do for this 100 days, but I guess you answered my question already. Right, okay. Well, let me ask you this, Joe. What are you doing in Wisconsin this week?
Just getting ready for we got a few days off this next week. We just took some personal time. We're going to have we have home renovations happening at the moment. Wow. Hopefully they're done by the weekend. And then we have the next 3 work days after the weekend off. So we're just looking to get some quality family time in before I go jetting away. And, she's not exactly happy I'm doing that, even though she's the one that booked it in the first place. So it is my fault, though, of course, because I like to go to Banjo Bowl. So it's my fault.
Wow. It is.
It is your fault. It is. And I'm not even claiming it's not.
Well, enjoy this, because you know what you're going to be doing in about, 5-6 years? You're going to be prepping that kid for school. You're going to be going to open houses like Dr. Rouge is doing tonight. You're going to be, getting the kids ready the day before, like I'm doing tonight. That's what you're going to be doing. So enjoy the Banjo Bowl while you can.
Yep. I could just picture that day in about 5 years' time.
That's what I'm saying.
He's walking out to the bus stop at the corner wearing his Bombers backpack and his Bombers t-shirt. I'm dreaming, of course, because as much as I'd like to do that, he's obviously going to be much better dressed than what I would suggest he dress in.
Yeah.
So he will be a good-looking little boy when he walks out to his first day at kindergarten.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, compared to the rest of the kids who are all going to be wearing Green Bay Packers gear, could have the one.
There might be a Badger thing in there.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, we're only about 20 minutes away, so okay. There would be some Badger stuff in there too. So he won't be a complete outcast, especially since the Bomber colors blend in very nicely with Brewer colors.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If they're the base at that point, maybe he'll even blend in.
All right. Well, there's the future brought to you by Joe Pritchard and family. For the present, I'm Oz Davis, and I'll be signing off for the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast from my co-host, Joe Pritchard. Enjoy the games, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.